WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, unruly children, and library books, there is no due date, grief, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 4th of March, 2020. You're listening to Arthur here, 91.5 FM. I got to continue off from where I left last week with Johnny Dollar. I have 3 episodes remaining in The Tears of the Night Matter. First off would be episode 398. These were, again, were quarter hour dailies with 5 shows comprising the week. So I played 97 and 96 last week, so now I've got to continue. I'm going to intermix some duets because I had a request for a particular duet, and I just don't know how to fill a half hour because I'm playing 3-quarter hourly Johnny Dollars, so that would leave me with approximately 15 minutes of showtime to fill. Well, anyway, this is the Tears of the Night Matter, episode 3 of the Tears of the Night Matter. It's technically episode 398. Original air date on the 23rd of May, 1956.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Johnny Dollar.
I'll take that, wise guy. Mr. Frankie Scanlon. Yeah, I'll tell him. What was that you yelled on the phone?
You heard it.
I heard you say Johnny Dollar.
I told you a long time back I wasn't Hillary Fuchs.
You told me a lot of things.
If I'm going to see Costigan, trot him out.
Just open the door and walk right in. I'm right behind you, see?
Hello, Sam.
Johnny Dollar. What's he doing here, Frankie?
You mean this isn't Fuchs?
Get out of here. Get out of here before I throw something at you.
You heard the man, Frankie. Blow.
No, sit down, Johnny. I won't bother shaking hands. You tried to put me in jail the last time we met.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. Location, Miami Beach. To the Universal Adjustment Bureau, 518 Spear Boulevard, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Tears of Night matter.
I'm going to sit down here behind my desk and have a drink, Johnny. And while I'm having it, I'm going to ask you a question.
Save your breath. I'll answer it anyhow, Sam. Sam Costigan sat hunched behind the big mahogany desk, glaring at me with a pair of small pig eyes half hidden in a beefy red face. Both hands rested out in front of him, flat. I told him how I'd come to Miami Beach to look into an insurance claim made by Elise Wendover, how I'd been in the office of Hillary Fuchs, her business manager, when Frank Scanlon had walked in, mistaken me for Fuchs, waved a gun under my nose, and insisted I come with him to see Costigan. So here I was, and so what about it?
Help yourself, Johnny.
Well, that's a pretty nice joint, Sam. How long have you been in business in Florida?
Oh, about 2 years.
How's the gross?
Isn't as good as running beer in Chicago, but them days are gone forever. I make out all right. 2 crap tables to rule that table, a couple of games. A bar and restaurant break it up even. Man, I gotta be careful.
Yeah. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers.
Well, you seem to have enough muscle outside and around to keep you comfy and cozy.
Yeah, punks, all of them. Look at that Frankie Scanlon who dragged you over here. Crazy, that one. But he's the best of the lot, the best I can get nowadays. Not a good muscle living in the business.
You could retire.
Yeah, I might do that one of these days. No. Tell me about your hookup with this Wendover dame, huh?
No hookup, Sam. She claimed benefits on her husband's life insurance. The claim should have been made 2 years ago. I investigated. It's okay.
Made her?
Yeah.
Screwball, huh?
In some ways. She's all right.
Well, maybe it's as good you're here as this Fuchs guy. I wanted him to handle some business for her, but maybe you can handle it. Yeah. You ever see this before?
No.
Oh, it's a little bit of necklace called Tears of Night. It's worth a big hunk of cash. These four diamonds are good stuff. Your friend Miss Wendover left it here a week or so ago when she went for a plunge at the roulette table. Anything to say?
It's a very pretty necklace, Sam.
Okay. We both know she's screwy, a widow with a lot of dough and a boyfriend named Teddy. Teddy Davis. He paints. Well, she sent me a check for the 5 G's she lost that night, and I wanted Fuchs to take this thing back to her, but now I got you instead. I want you to take it to her, huh? How about it?
Is that all?
That's all. I got my dough, she gets her Tears of Night back. I couldn't trust any of my punks with it, and I don't like to be seen in public, so you just take it back, huh? It's very simple. Why?
Don't ever go on the stage, Sam.
Why not?
You can act, but you can't lie. You just can't lie at all. And it takes a good liar to be a good actor. Now that you've told me how simple it is, suppose you give me the unexpurgated sequel.
All right, so a check bounced.
Oh, stop it, Sam. She can't issue a check without a countersignature by Hillary Fuchs. He hasn't issued one check on her account since he took it over 10 days ago. So if this thing is hers, explain it all to me, will you? The way it is.
I want another drink. Yeah, you're right, Johnny. There wasn't any check. Miss Wendover called me a couple of hours ago and said if I didn't have this thing back to her tonight, she'd call a load of cops and come out and tear us to joint apart. She sounded like she'd do it, too. I mean, well, you met her. You can't tell what she'll do from 1 minute till the next. Screw her, you know?
Not so screwy if she dropped $5,000 and left that. And now she gets it back for nothing.
I just want to get it off my hands. If she came out here with a cop, I'd be closed for the season. And I'm getting old. You know where she lives?
Mm-hmm. I was there earlier tonight.
Here, take the ice store and I'll chalk it up to experience, huh? Then you can grab a cab back and come on back out here and I'll see that you have a good time on the house. How about it?
I'll take it to her, but I won't come back here, Sam.
Oh, Scanlon Feely, them guys, huh? They worry you?
You do.
What?
I don't believe your last story either. The only thing I believe is that this is Mrs. Wendover's necklace. So I'll take it to her. Sam.
Yeah?
You better get someone beside Feely at that table after this.
You're telling me.
He was mopping his face when I closed the door and went downstairs. By that time, the customers had started to roll in. Young, fresh-faced men with sallow eyes and quick movements, anxious to step up to the tables and lose money. Women in strapless dresses, anxious to show off their newest suntans and help whatever man they were with lose money. Old men, old women, dressed to the teeth. It was a sick old scene from a sick old play. Expense account item 4, $6. Cab fare from Sam Costigan's gambling club to Elise Wendover's apartment.
Oh, Teddy, I thought you'd never get here. The performance begins at 10 o'clock, and you know how the traffic is, and if we're going to have a bite to eat. You aren't Teddy at all, are you?
I'm afraid not, Mrs. Wendover.
Where's Teddy?
I don't know.
Oh. What are you looking at?
Your throat.
Really, Mr.
Dollar. Johnny Dollar. I met you in Hillary Fuchs' office. We talked here later on. Remember?
Of course I remember. Well, really, Mr. Dollar, I'm only waiting for Teddy to come by so we can make the first show at the plaza. I better telephone him, don't you think?
Yes, you do that.
Good night, Mr. Dollar.
The white ermine cape she was wearing and the black strapless thing needed a final touch. She had it. A diamond necklace. In fact, the Tears of Night, the one I had in my pocket, was hanging around her lovely neck. Downstairs in the good light of the lobby, I snapped open the necklace case. Mortuus it read, House of Jewelry. A gloomy word with a gloomy address. The sign on the window of the House of Mortuus gave a phone number in case of emergency. Item 6, 10 cents, one phone call about my emergency. I made it vague to Mr. Mortuus that thousands of people might die before 6 o'clock in the morning unless I could talk to someone about a piece of jewelry. It went over. Item 7, 50 cents. Cab fare to the Sandy Beach Hotel on the less expensive side of Miami Beach.
You find me a bit indisposed, Mr. Dollar, but on the phone you said it was a matter of jewelry. Therefore, Hannibal Mortuus is at your service. Now then, sir, what is so urgent?
I came to ask you about a diamond necklace. I found your name stamped on the inside of the case.
House of Mortuus. A most respected name in diamonds, as well as all the lapidary arts. Most respected. Fine jewels and the name Mortuus are... Oh, I do beg your pardon. Continue, Mr. Dollar.
I want you to take a look at this.
And how, sir, do you come in possession of the Tears of Night?
A man named Sam Costigan, who runs a gambling club, asked me to deliver it to a lady named Elise Wendover. Do you know her?
A lovely body propelled by a ridiculous mind. This matter you have just described bears me out. For shame, such conduct. A gambling house. The Tears of Night, a pawn. Blech.
Then this is the real thing. It isn't phony.
Mr. Dollar, I'm a gemologist. The House of Mortuus. Of course it's real.
Take a good look.
When an artist creates a dazzling thing of beauty such as this, would he be so unlikely as to forget the time, the patience, the agony of his creation, eh? See here, look here, under the light. 4 weeks, Mr. Dollar, 4 weeks working night and day just to drill that anchor for a simple molding. But see how each stone is carefully mounted to capture every single pinpoint of light. Beautiful, beautiful. An incomparable masterpiece. For the money.
Well, I'm just curious, Mr. Mortuus. How much money?
About $10,000 on the wholesale market.
What did Noah Wendover pay for it?
$25,000.
I saw another one just like it tonight.
Ridiculous. The finest workman at best would only create a crude resemblance. This kind of artistry demands an artist, Mr. Dollar. And I am that artist.
But it could get by, a copy of it.
To the unpracticed eye, to the layman perhaps, yes. Latet in anguis herba, Latin.
Yeah, well, all I know is Agricola.
A snake in the grass, eh? Something wrong?
Yeah, mildly put, something wrong, yes. Well, how much do I owe you for your time, Mr. Mortuus?
Oh, nothing, nothing. It was my pleasure. You know, glancing at that again reassures me of the value and dignity of my work. Anywhere, it is magnificent. But I dawdle. You say something is wrong. What?
Mrs. Wendover, you say you met her.
Several times.
She ever mentioned anything to you about a curse?
Curse? Curse? No, I can't say that she did. May I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Are you a friend of hers?
In a way, off and on.
I know what you mean. One is never quite certain with Mrs. Wendover whether one will be recognized or not, is one? Well, it's late.
Yeah, well, I'm just leaving.
No, you misread me, sir. I wasn't speaking of my own comfort. I noticed the fog has come in. It is dark outside. This is a lonely area. That is a valuable object. Are you armed?
No.
If you are at all concerned for the safety of that piece, I have a small safe in my rooms. You may have the key if you'd care to leave it overnight.
I'll take it with me.
Yeah. Just as well, probably. Suggestion only. You leave satisfied, I trust, Mr. Dollar?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mr. Mortuus.
My pleasure, Mr. Dollar. remember, omnia mortuus bonum vocal est. All speak well of Mortuus. A pun, sir, a pun. Good evening.
Downstairs in the dismal lobby of the Sandy Beach Hotel, I looked out beyond the dirty glass windows to discover that the fog had indeed come in and surrounded the area with a choking darkness. The concern of Mr. Mortuus for his artistic creation told me to bang on the night bell and ask the night clerk for some wrapping paper and 50 cents worth of stamps. Expense account item 8. Item 9, phone call for a cab. Just before it arrived, I dropped the Tears of Night addressed to myself at my hotel in the lobby mailbox. I don't think the two hoodlums waiting outside saw me do it. I didn't think they saw me at all. But they followed my cab when it took me back to my hotel.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, and the old curse comes up with an old-fashioned flourish. See you then. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Thank you, lads. That was the Tears of the Night matter. So we finally figure out what the Tears of the Night is in this one, huh? That old boy had a good line for that woman, too, and I forget what it was. That was the original air date, the 23rd of May, 1956. As I indicated earlier, I have a request. Actually, this Johnny Dollar was a request. Well, somebody requested I play Johnny Dollar. But actually, the president of the Grand Hour fan club. But now, the heir to the Grand Hour Radio Empire made a request last week that I didn't honor, so I'm going to honor it this week. But I'm going to have to play a few other songs to fill in the time. So I'll go ahead and start off that. Kind of unusual to play so much music here on the Grand Hour. But hey, I need to fill the time. Thanks for listening.
Think I'm running round And that's why you're so keen.
Now that's another line of the same old stuff that I hope you don't expect me to believe. Go out tonight, but don't come back, 'cause you've just lost a home.
But who's gonna take your garbage out when I pack my bags and gone? I'm running round, and that's why you're so keen.
Now that's another line of the same old stuff that I hope you don't expect me to believe. Go out tonight, but don't come back, 'cause you've just lost a home.
But who's gonna take your garbage out when I pack my bags and gone? Honey, who's gonna take your garbage out when I pack my bags and gone? You're gonna miss me, honey, gal.
Are you kidding?
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety.
Medford. Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. That last song was Who's Gonna Take Your Garbage Out by Ernest Tubb and Loretta Lynn. That was on Sitting on the Front Porch album. That was preceded by Nancy Sinatra and Lee Hazelwood. I've Been Down So Long, It Looks Like Up to Me. That was off their 1968 reprise album, Nancy and Lee. Well, after the next Johnny Dollar, I'm going to play another couple of duets featuring a couple of famous people. Like famous in an animation and film sense, but otherwise let's get on with the Tears of the Night Matter episode 4, which is actually episode 399 of the Tears of the Night Matter. Original air date the 24th of May 1956. You're listening to Arthur here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Your number is ringing, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, thanks.
Hello?
This is Johnny Dollar.
Dollar? I thought you went back to Hartford.
I meant to, but I got tied up in Mrs. Wendover's business affairs again.
What now?
Can you come over to my hotel right away?
It's 1 o'clock in the morning.
I know it.
Well, can't you grab a cab and come over here?
Hardly.
Why not?
A couple of Sam Costigan's boys followed me here. I think they might like to do a little target practice on me.
Oh.
Gun at me and said Sam Costigan wanted to see me.
Costigan, the gambler?
The same. Scanlon thought I was you. He took me over to Costigan's place.
What's this got to do with insurance?
Nothing. But it has something to do with Mrs. Wendover. Costigan had a necklace, the Tears of Night there. He said Mrs. Wendover left it as a pawn a week or so ago.
Oh?
He told me Mrs. Wendover called up and threatened to come out with policemen unless Costigan returned it. And as long as I was there, Costigan asked me to take it to her. I went over to her place, and what do you know? She was wearing the Tears of Night.
I don't get this.
Well, have another drink, neither do I. By the time I got there to her apartment, Mrs. Wendover hardly remembered my name or that we'd met in your office. She was waiting for her boyfriend to show up. Incidentally, his name's Teddy Davis. Is he after her money or what?
Search me. I never met him.
Well, I skipped out of there and looked up the jeweler who'd made the necklace, a man named Hannibal Mortuus.
I heard of him. He speaks Latin or something.
That's the one. He told me the necklace I had was the real thing. Now, I want you to tell me who made up the one Mrs. Wendover was wearing.
I don't know anything about it.
Well, it had to be made up sometime within the last week, and you've been handling her business affairs.
I don't know a thing about it, Johnny.
All right, come here, take a look. Do you know anything about those two birds outside there?
No.
Well, one of them's a character named Feely. He works for Costigan. The other one I saw at Costigan's club. They tailed me from Mortuus's place. Probably been on me all night long since I picked up the necklace.
Where is it now?
I mailed it to myself from Mortuus's hotel.
Those two out there, you better call the police if you think they're after you.
Oh, nothing I could tell the police that would hold them up half a second. Mainly, I wanted to ask you about all this before I went on with it.
What do you mean, go on with it?
Go back to Mrs. Wendover, to Costigan, find out what's real and what isn't real?
This isn't your line of duty. Why?
Oh, I've been thinking about that. I don't know why. Maybe it's Mrs. Wendover, those eyes of hers, and that talk about the curse. I got a feeling she needs help in this matter. Somehow she needs help.
What can I do, Johnny?
Go to bed. I'll let you know what happens. Now, where's your car?
In the parking lot back of the hotel.
Give me the keys. I'll use that.
Hey.
Make yourself at home, Mr. Fuchs. Go to bed here. Oh.
Yeah?
Every now and then, walk over and look out that window and have a drink. They'll think it's me, and that's a good thought for them to have.
Okay, what else?
Well, if they start for the lobby, call downstairs and have them send up the houseman and get the police. I don't think they will, but remember that.
Well, why would
they
want...
They still think I've got that piece of jewelry on me. We shook up another drink, and I borrowed Fuchs's trench coat and left. I found his green Chevy without too much trouble, since there weren't too many cars out in the lot that time of morning. I looked at my watch, and it said 2:35. I drove around front past the two hoodlums, still keeping up their silent vigil, and found a street that looked familiar. 20 minutes later, I was in the parking lot beside Elise Wendover's apartment building. It was still dark, still foggy, and too late, I found out, too crowded. Somehow, the pair of hoodlums were waiting for me after all.
Hey, this is him, Feely. Got a match, Dollar?
Toby asked you if you got a match. He's a dummy, Toby. Don't answer.
Got a match, Dollar?
What'd I tell you? He's a dummy boy.
You don't look like no dummy boy.
You're nearsighted.
Take your hands off.
He's a dummy, all right, ain't you, Dollar? See, Toby? I told him about you being nearsighted and he wouldn't answer.
He don't talk.
Go on, smart boy. Tell Toby how sorry you are about him being nearsighted. Talk. I heard you talk before. Told you he was a dummy.
Hey, tell me something, dummy. All insurance guys like you.
Toby asked you a question. He wants to know if all insurance guys are like you.
I don't like him.
He asked questions and he ain't told us nothing.
Hey, maybe we find out something we went through his pockets, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Even a dummy's got pockets. Ain't that right, dummy? Hold him, Toby.
Yeah. All right, boys, you played the scene good, and I'll see what I can do for you, but I haven't got the necklace.
Hey, he talks.
Yeah, yeah, you make him talk again, Toby. Now, don't make him talk too much. We know if the stuff ain't on him, it's in his room. We can pick it up anytime. That's it. Easy, Toby, easy.
Oh, he talks real nice, Feely, but he don't say much. Hey, you think maybe he's tough?
Could be.
No, I wasn't. And I didn't feel like talking in that quiet little parking lot where the only noise was them pounding on me. I told them I didn't have the necklace anymore, but they didn't care about that. They wanted to find out the hard way for me. I remember trying to wake up a couple of times. I dreamed I was driving along in a big Cadillac. Frank Scanlon was on one side of me, Sam Costigan on the other. Hannibal Mortuus was in the front seat. He had his jeweler's glass out, looking at the tears of night. I tried to see who was behind the steering wheel, and I gave that up because the steering wheel was a roulette wheel. Then we had a blowout, and the whole car vanished with everybody screaming, "Demortuous, Demortuous!" Somewhere around 6 a.m, I began to get a feeling, several feelings, and all of them hurt. It just turned dawn, and I rolled over on my side to watch a man who hadn't seen me step into his car with a fresh shave and a fishing pole. pulled out of the lot and disappear. Somewhere, vaguely, I heard the sounds of early morning traffic. Streetcar clang somewhere. Nothing much happened for a while. Then it came to me it might be a good idea to get on my feet and find a telephone and get hold of a doctor and see how long I had to live. Somehow I managed by holding onto a fence and stumbling against cars to make the front entrance to Elise Wendover's house. I made the elevator, self-service my way up to the 9th floor, and staggered toward 913. I would have been better off in the parking lot. Elise Wendover was there, sitting in a large chair by the window. She still wore the black strapless dress and ermine piece she'd had on the night before. The drapes were drawn, the door was slightly open. Light from the hall seeped in. She had a telephone on her lap. The receiver was off, held idly in one hand. She looked at me. But she was looking at nothing.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, Mr. Dollar, it's you. You've been in an accident. You're hurt.
I don't think you'll need this.
Oh. Well, then, Mr. Dollar. Well, then. I suppose you've met some people tonight who know a great deal about me.
A gambler? A jeweler?
Did they tell you about Teddy Davis? He's really a dear, Mr. Dollar. Quite the nicest boy I've met since Noah died on the boat. Noah and I had so many things together, Mr. Dollar. I do think he enjoyed being alive with me. I mean, I cried when Noah died. I really did. I cried like a little baby. Of course, I cried when I heard my brother was killed in Korea and when Daddy died in his office with a heart attack. I shouldn't really cry anymore. I mean, after all, I am cursed. I told you that.
Yes, I told you I didn't believe it. There's no such thing.
But there is. You'll see.
Mrs. Wendover.
No, I have Teddy. He's really a dear. I do think he will be a very prominent artist someday. He paints. You know? Teddy asked me to marry him tonight.
That's nice. You marry him.
And Teddy isn't interested in my money. Could you believe that? What is my mom? I get... I seem to get my tongue adjusted to my mouth. Did that ever happen to you, Mr. Dollar?
Yes, sometimes.
Perhaps I should see a correctionist. I'm glad you came by again, Mr. Dollar. I told you once that sometimes it means an awfully, awfully lot to speak to someone. Mr. Costigan.
Mr. What? What about Mr. Costigan?
Later, I know it must be strange to you, but some people live for nothing but money, and some people die for it.
Stop it! Now tell me what's happened. Tell me what's happened so I can help you.
They do look so funny. They're so very funny. I've seen them count money so often and so much money, and I really believe that it's honestly all they live for. Only.
She pointed across the darkened room. Her black eyes glistened with no semblance of reason left in them. It took me 5 seconds to find the light switch. Stretched out on the floor of her apartment, they look funny, all right. Feely and Toby. Both of them as dead as you can get.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's final intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, the tears of night come home. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Although that won't be tomorrow, it'll be here in about a few minutes. That was episode 4 of The Tears of the Night Matter. It was actually episode 399 total of Johnny Dollar. Then original air date, the 24th of May, 1956. Interspersed between these three that I'm quarter hour dramas that I'm playing today, I've been playing some duets because I had a request from the air to the Grand Hour Radio Empire to play a particular song. So in order to fit that in, I... In order to oblige, I have to play some other duets. I figured just play some duets. This first one's kind of an interesting one. See if you can recognize it before I introduce it. Not introduce it, but tell you who it was after the fact. This is Arthur, hosting at the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
Sing till the feeling gets right.
Well, let's harmonize, we'll be dynamite.
I can yodel the high notes, I've done it for years.
Good deal, old buddy, and I'll pour the beers.
There's always some lady alone at the bar.
Yeah, and you always let her know just who you are.
I know a couple gals that we can call. Damn, they'll shake the picture right off of your wall.
We're barroom buddies, and that's the best kind. Nobody fools with a buddy of mine.
I laugh when you're happy,
and I cry when you're blue.
We're barroom buddies, and we're doing fine.
So pour me another, we got nothing but time.
Old chug-a-lug-a-luggin', barroom buddy of mine.
Bartender's trying to turn out the lights.
Well, maybe it is time we call it a night.
Hell, we'll wake up the roosters if we drank them real slow.
Well, let's have the double and a six-pack to go. We're barroom buddies, and that's the best kind. Nobody fools with a buddy of mine.
I laugh when you're happy,
and I cry when you're blue.
We're barroom buddies, and we're doing fine.
So pour me another, we got nothing but time.
Oh, chug-a-lug-a-luggin', barroom buddy of mine.
Now we're skirt chasing,
tail kicking,
guitar picking,
pool hustling.
Old chug-a-lug-a-lugging, old barroom buddy of
when you're near, I'm never far.
We're a matched and perfect set,
never separated yet. In fact,
we are the indisputable,
it's positively irrefutable.
You might say we're me and you-table teammates.
Cause
we are the most reliable,
definitely undeniable.
It's like we're you and I-able teammates, teammates. We when I broke my arm last summer, you are the cat.
What else could I do? With teammates through and through, me and you.
Teammates,
teammates, teammates.
When I exercise, it's you who always starts breathing fast.
How else could it be? We're suited to a T, you and me.
Teammates, teammates, teammates. Now that's the long and short of it. Beyond the bridge report of it. The starboard and the port of it. Teammates, teammates.
Yeah, that's
Okay. That was Mel Blanc and Henry Corden. Yes, Mel Blanc as Fred Flintstone, blah, blah. And Teammates from the motion picture soundtrack, The Man Called Flintstone. That was the request from the heir to the Grand Hour Radio Empire. Figured before that, I played something that's pretty interesting off the Bronco Billy soundtrack, which is one of my favorite Clint Eastwood movies. That was Merle Haggard and Clint Eastwood doing Barroom Buddies. I don't know if he's... he might have sang another song at some point. He's not really singing. He's more of just being Clint Eastwood. Okay. That brings us up to snuff. I'm going to go ahead and play out the final episode of the Tears of the Night Matter. It's episode 5 of Quarter Hour Dailies. This is episode 400, though, in totality, with the Johnny, yours truly, Johnny Dollar series. This one had an original air date of the 25th of May, 1956. I'm getting in a little bit before schedule, so I might have to play another duet. I got one or two more in the attaché case. But anyway, we'll go ahead and finish up Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Good morning, darling. Hello, hello. We should get married today.
Is your name Teddy Davis?
What? Who is this? Where's Elise?
My name's Johnny Dollar. I'm in her apartment.
What? Hey, what?
Now listen to me. I'm an insurance investigator, and there have been a couple of murders here.
Murders? In Elise's apartment?
She's going to need you and all the help she can get to bring her out of it. Mostly you. I've called Homicide, and they're on their way, and it might be pretty rough for her.
I'll be right over.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Tears of Night matter. It was a long morning, and a lieutenant of police thought I was crazy when he met me in the apartment with two dead men and the hysterical woman. My face was bruised and black and blue from the beating the dead men had handed me the night before. The lieutenant, his name was Brady, had a time getting hold of Hillary Fuchs to back up my story. But Teddy Davis was a different matter. He showed up with a doctor and lawyer. And through their combined efforts, Elise Wendover was removed not to police headquarters, but to a private hospital. It was obvious from powder tests that Mrs. Wendover could not have fired the .45, which ended the lives of Feely and Toby. Obvious to me. Lieutenant Brady was a skeptical man.
You stay right there and keep your trap shut. I'll figure out what to do with you in a minute. All right, come on, get those baskets out of here.
I say, Dollar.
Hi, Teddy. How's Mrs. Wendell?
Well, that remains to be seen. She's screaming about that darned curse again. She thinks she had something to do with these murders. Dollar, I don't know quite how you fit into all this. I do know I'm terribly indebted to you for calling me. Now, what can I do for you? Are you in trouble?
I don't think so. Brady's just excited. He can't see where I should be involved, so he suspects me.
Of what?
Oh, he doesn't know that. He's a policeman, and he suspects everybody. But don't you worry about it. You get back to her.
I really do have a good lawyer. He can work on it if you give the word. I can't just walk out of here feeling that you're in jeopardy. Now, what can I do?
I thought you were over at the hospital, Mr. Davis.
I was. I came back to see what I could do for Mr. Dollar.
You can scram now.
Watch whom you're talking to, Lieutenant. This man is my friend.
Hey, are you kidding?
Not a bit.
Take it easy, fellas. Take it easy.
Yeah. You said your name's Dollar. Insurance Dick. Let's see your buzzer. Okay, out of Hartford. What's the job?
Mrs. Wendover's husband died 2 years ago. She just got around to filing for benefits last week. We were curious about it.
Go on.
Well, can't you see, Mrs. Wendover?
Let him, huh?
As near as I can make out, Mrs. Wendover's overlooked a lot of things since her husband's death. Taxes, bank accounts, whatnot. Hillary Fuchs can tell you that much.
This curse business she mumbles about.
Well, she lost her husband. Before that, her brother, killed in the war, and her father before that.
You know, you don't seem to pay much attention. I explained
all
of it.
I'm gonna pop you in the cooler if you open your mouth again, Mr. Davis. Go on, how about the insurance?
Well, all okay. I was ready to leave town last night. As a matter of fact, I'd called for a plane from Fuchs' office. When a man named Scanlon came in, mistook me for Fuchs, and said Sam Costigan wanted to see me. Costigan's got a gambling place on the
other side. Yeah, we know about it. Go on.
Well, Costigan gave me a necklace, the Tears of Night. Said it belonged to Mrs. Wendover. He asked me to bring it back to her. Said she'd pawned it at the roulette table. When I got here, Mrs. Wendover was wearing the Tears of Night, or something that looked just like it. Well, I was curious. I looked up the jeweler who had made it, a man named Mortuus. He said I was carrying the real thing. When I left his place, a couple of men from Costigan's place followed me.
Who?
Those two who were killed, Feely and Toby. They caught up with me outside of this apartment house and tried to shake me down for the necklace. But I'd mailed it to myself at my hotel. So they worked me over and left me there. When I came to earlier this morning, I came up here and found Mrs. Wendover sitting here in a state of shock. The two stiffs in her room.
That's it?
Yeah, Brady, that's it.
How long you been an insurance dick?
14 years.
You bonded?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you going to let him go or aren't you?
Shut up. Shut up and I'll tell you both what I'm up against here. I know Mrs. Wendover couldn't have had anything to do with the killings. I know you, Dollar, couldn't either.
Then go out and find who killed those two men.
Those two and the other one.
Huh?
Costigan was gunned down a couple of hours ago.
About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Brady released me and Teddy Davis drove me back to my hotel. The clerk at the desk looked at my bandaged face and turned 8 shades of white when he handed me my key. I thanked him and told him I'd kept a date with a barracuda. I was feeling kiddish. Also a little dizzy and a little tired. I was looking forward to a hot shower and 10 hours sleep when I walked in my room.
Oh, Dollar, I've been expecting you. Come in, sir, come in.
Oh. Hello, Mr. Mortuus.
I've been amusing myself with this pocket chess set of yours. Mexican, eh? Sit down, sit down. You've had a hectic night.
Your boys were pretty rough, Mr. Mortuus.
Philly and Toby are two men of another world, Mr. Dollar, not of our world. Allow me to apologize for their actions.
I want more than an apology. They almost beat me to death.
And so unnecessary, too. You know, I underestimated you, Mr. Dollar. Such an ingenious method of protecting the Tears of Night. Why, sir, by the simple expedient of placing it in an envelope and mailing it to yourself from my hotel lobby, you hired as guardians the entire United States Postal Service, not to mention the armed forces.
Yeah. Want one of these?
No, thanks. I'm one of those faint-hearted persons who cannot abide liquor until after 6 p.m.
What happens now?
We wait for the mail.
We do,
huh? Precisely.
Then while we're waiting, maybe you'll be kind enough to tell me about the double cross.
If you can bear my vanity, Mr. Dollar, I have invented a new word, triple cross. It has a ring to it, eh?
That sounds likely.
You see, Mr. Scanlon approached me last week and asked me to duplicate the Tears of Night Mrs. Wendover had truly pawned at the gaming table. Naturally, I became suspicious.
Let me guess what you became suspicious of.
Oh, well, it was fairly obvious that Mr. Scanlon was planning to double-cross Mr. Costigan. That is, when the time came to return Mrs. Wendover's necklace, he, Scanlon, I mean, intended to return the bogus piece I made up.
And you got into the act.
That is when I first conceived my own plans, yes. Unfortunately, Mr. Costigan learned of the little deceit going on around him, and Mr. Scanlon was forced to shoot him.
So Scanlon shot Costigan. How about Toby and Feely?
Mr. Scanlon again, abetted by the last of the house of Mortuus.
You helped him kill them, then planted them in Elise Wendover's apartment.
Oh, dear, a crude touch, I thought, but it had a purpose. With two cadavers in her living room, she was very unlikely to discuss her bogus necklace with the police. And I doubt very much if she knew whether she was wearing the original or an imitation. Flighty girl.
That's the lousiest thing the house of Mortuus ever did. She walked in and found these two there, and the doctor doesn't know whether she'll ever be sane again.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. If you had merely returned the necklace to Mrs. Wendover, it would have been a simple thing to effect an exchange, and none of this would have been necessary. Well, then, bygones are bygones.
Yeah, sure, I know. You just sit here and wait for the mail.
No. We wait for the mail.
What about your playmate, Scanlon? Why isn't he waiting with you?
Scanlon? I'm afraid I'll be sought for a murder of two or three this night. I'm certain the police will find his body before the day is out, but I did need him to help me carry the bodies to Elise Wendover's apartment. Elise, tell me something, Mr. Dollar. Does that name Elise bother you as much as it bothers me? Give me a woman with a name like Celeste or Josephine or Roxanne. Those, sir, are names for the creatures. But Elise, yeah, twaddle.
Where are the police going to find Scanlon?
Oh, in my hotel room, which I departed hastily once the room clerk had informed me of your ingenious method for protecting the necklace. I shot him there.
You work cheap, Mr. Mortuous.
Cheap, sir? I don't understand.
$10,000 necklace. It's not quite a king's ransom, is it?
The tears of night are worth closer to $100,000. I'm afraid I misinformed you as to their value. I didn't want you to become suspicious.
I suppose you think you'll get away with it.
Well, I'm an old man. Attended to a destitute and bankrupt jewelry firm with nothing ahead. A few grim years and finally a whimpering end. Requiescat in pace. Live. That's what I want to do. Live. And this is my opportunity to live like a king. And young man, I've taken it. Veni. Vidi. Vici.
Oh, you're crazy. You're crazier than a mosquito in December, Mr. Montuous. They'll grab you before you make the airport.
I don't think they will. I shall leave here and turn the tears of night into cash. With a well-laden purse, I shall guarantee to elude the police over half the world. In 2 years, maybe three. Oh, yes, they'll get me. But I'll have spent the money. And what more could a man ask than a perfect fulfillment of all his wishes, eh? I ask you, sir, as one gentleman to another, what more could a man ask? Cautious, Mr. Dollar. I do shoot well. Answer it. Tell them to go away. I'll be right beside you. All right. Open it.
One side, Dollar. I got a gun.
Scanlon.
I thought I'd find you waiting for the mail. You dirty... You didn't do such a good job on me.
Caution, Mr. Scanlon. I have a gun, too.
I'll last long enough to let you have it.
Your loss of blood has made you groggy, Mr. Scanlon.
But still good enough.
Scanlon rolled over and lay still. Watch, he was kind of grunted and leaned back against the wall. He had a pained look on his face.
Mr. Dollar. I do believe I've been shot. I'll need a little assistance. I can't seem to hold my feet, sir. I can't seem to hold my feet.
Lie still.
It was an awkward plan at best, eh? Demortuis nil nisi bonum, Dollar. Or if your Latin still escapes you, speak well of the dead.
Let me have the police. Expense account. Well... Expense account total, $405.16. Details? Mrs. Wendover will recover. Remarks? I'll stand for the last 2 days of expense myself. I didn't have any business sticking my nose in the jewelry end of it. But if you make me pay for them, don't ever try to hire me again. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Here's our star to tell you about next week's intriguing story.
Next week, the matter of a reasonable doubt, a case of many doubts, and believe me, all of them are most unreasonable. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Virginia Gregg, Victor Perrin, Jack Crucian, Jane Avello, William Conrad, Frank Gerstle, Marvin Miller, and Will...
Yes, that was Tears of the Night Matter. Headphones were screwy. That was the Tears of the Night Matter, episode 400, actually, of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, but that was episode 5 of that particular story. An original air date of the 25th of May, 1956. You've been listening to Arthur here on the Grand Hour this morning on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Up next is Worst Boys Guild. It's their first show, so I'm going to exit a little early so they can set up. Thanks for listening.
With your seatbelts fastened until the seatbelt sign is...